Welcome to The Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by DragonMount.com.
The Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series created by Robert Jordan.
At its conclusion, the series will consist of 14 novels and one prequel novel.
Sadly, Robert Jordan did not live to see his work complete.
Brandon Sanderson, appointed by Mr. Jordan's widow, Harriet Rigney, will complete the series with the novels The Gathering Storm, Towers of Midnight, and A Memory of Light, based on the notes left by Mr. Jordan.
This podcast is dedicated to discussing and enjoying the monumental work of fiction that is The Wheel of Time.
Welcome to another episode of The Fourth Age. This is Virginia, and with me tonight is Spencer, and we are also expecting Andy to show up, possibly later. He was unavoidably detained. So in the meantime, Spencer and I will carry on. Hi, Spencer.
Hi, Virginia. Hey, everyone out there listening. Tonight we're going to be continuing our recap of The Gathering Storm, starting from Chapter 1, hopefully getting through to Chapter 3. Fingers crossed. Before we get into our recap, though, we need to take care of a couple of things. First is our customary, always in effect, spoiler warning. We are discussing all of the books in the Wheel of Time series, especially, hey, guess what? The Gathering Storm, which just came out. We also might be discussing Towers of Midnight. You never know. Wink, wink, nod, nod. Give me an arc! Anyway.
Yay!
Anyway.
So it's all what all the time here. And
yes,
every
it
book.
Is.
Every book.
So if you have not read up through The Gathering Storm all the way through, we're going to be spoiling all of it. Even though we're only going over chapters 1, 2, and 3, we're going to be talking about everything that happened during the course of the entire book. So you may or may not want to continue listening to this podcast at current moment.
But we hope you'll come back to it later, of course.
Of course.
When you have,
always.
When you have read. Yeah. Right.
Dude,
we don't
come back when
you
finished it. No,
yes.
Heaven forbid.
We don't want to lose you, gentle listeners. But we don't want to spoil your experience either.
Nope. And we'll try very hard not to spoil other books as well. We have been known to do, you know, Mistborn spoilers, Star Trek spoilers, anything that comes to mind we'll spoil the crap out of. So, but we'll try not to, maybe.
Yes, yes. Another little housekeeping detail we need to take care of is to thank and heartily thank the website encyclopedia-watt.org. It is an absolute essential for all Wheel of Time fans. It's the most elaborate and thorough and complete reference website that I know of for the Wheel of Time, apart from perhaps WattFax. But it's really great, and we are actually using the chapter summaries from encyclopediawatt.org, and we try to sort of not read it word for word, but in the times, you know, it will actually almost be word for word. So in any case, we're very grateful to them because it's an invaluable resource, and we hope that you will make use of it as well. So thank you, Encyclopedia
Watt. Yeah, thank you, Encyclopedia Watt and
Bob Quest. Awesome website.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yes, it's
awesome,
absolutely
awesome.
Amazing. And we use it often. And, well, I usually just have it open constantly while we're recording so that I can find any piece of information I need.
And we hope to have him back on the show again, too, because he's a lot of fun to talk to.
Yes. Yes, we do want to. We're going to. With this new program, we have the ability to easily get others connected in so that we can do interviews and guest appearances, and he's definitely on the list.
Absolutely.
We're going to jump right into it so that we can hopefully get through it all in a reasonable amount of time, and we're going to start with Chapter 1, and I'm going to do it a little bit differently, because rather than jumping right into the summary, I'm going to jump right into the text, because, well, it's Chapter 1. It's the first paragraph. It has to be read.
All right. Well, hold on. Let me get my pen.
Oh, God. You can't reach it. Oh.
Don't hurt yourself.
Oh, gear. Hold on. Oh, I have my book now. I feel so much better. I feel safe and secure.
I have the book. I have the comfort book. Yay. All right.
Okay.
All right, so jumping right in to Chapter 1. Which is entitled Tears from Steel, and it's from Rand's point of view. Although you wouldn't guess that, reading the first paragraph. The Wheel of Time turns, and ages come and pass, leaving memories that become legend. legend fades to myth, and even myth is long forgotten when the age that gave it birth comes again. In one age, called the Third Age by some, an age yet to come, an age long past, a wind rose around the alabaster spire known as the White Tower. The wind was not the beginning. There are neither beginnings nor endings to the turnings of the Wheel of Time. But it was a beginning. The wind rises around the White Tower and passes over the Aleander Bridge and into the town of Aleander. Nearby is the rebel army, numbering 50,000. The wind continues, passing Dragon Mount, heading over the Black Hills and Carlane Grass to Ered Domin. A countering wind from the north brings a stench of death. Rand and Min are in a log manor house in far eastern Ered Domin. His eyes are slowly getting better. He thinks of himself as hard as steel. He's been moving a lot since Lord Algarin's manor was compromised. Bashir's army is camped on the green near the house. He wears an unusual sword that he recently unearthed. He thinks to himself that he remembers it, and not from Luz Theron's memories. And he can feel that Avienda is coming closer. He can also sense Elaine and Alana as well. Elaine feels relieved, probably from her victory in Camelin. Luz Theron moans about Elenia, and Rand thinks about what Simarog said while impersonating the Daughter of the Nine Moons. Really? She was impersonating the Daughter of the Nine Moons when she said that they went crazy. I thought she was Simarog at that point.
Yes, she was.
Huh. Is that an error in the text or in the summary?
Well, it's in the summaries.
Oh, all right.
Yes, email Bob and tell him that she was already unmasked as Simarog when she said that Rand was crazy. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. So let me set that. Luz Theron moans about Elenia, and Rand thinks about what Simarog had said. There are 10 Ashaman in camp. Only Flynn, Nourishma, and Naif are full Ashaman. Bashir is touring the Saldaean camp with Lord Talion. Or Talane? Probably Lord Talane, the owner of this manor. Rand wonders if Tenobia will really give him her support. Itteralt has been very effective in his fight against the Shanshan. This is Rodel Itteralda. Itteralda, Rodel, him, person, being. There's a lot of just random thoughts here going on. See, Rand wonders if Tenobia will really give him her support. Itteralda has been very effective in his fighting against the Shanshan. Rand wonders if Grendel is still in Ered Domin, as Asmodian had told him. He still doesn't know what became of Asmodian. Rand's goal is to...
We know.
Well, we know part of it. We know he's dead. And he's not coming back.
They don't know, but you will.
Yep. Rand's goal is to fulfill his answers from the Aelfin, that he must unite the south and the west and the north and the east. He intends to bring peace to Ered Domin and make a truce with the Shanshan. Cadswane arrives with Nynaeve and Olivia. Min stiffens when she sees Olivia, as she always does, because of her viewing that Olivia will help Rand die. They have been questioning Simarog. Rand will not allow torture on a woman, even one of the Forsaken, so they have learned nothing. Cadswane suggests turning him over to the White Tower, Cadswane suggests turning her over to the White Tower, and Rand asks which one, Elida or Egwene. Luz Theron grumbles about the women Aes Sedai not helping him, then moans about Elenia. Rand shouts at him out loud, and the others in the room stare at him. Rand is losing control. There may be nothing left of him to fight at Sheol Gul. He should cry, but tears cannot come from steel.
Dun, 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 dun. There is so much in that chapter that I scarcely know where to begin. First of all, let me declare out front that I am outraged that those idiots would not be a little harder on Simarog. They should have been wringing that woman dry.
Well, I'm not sure if that would have worked. I don't think that Simarog would have responded in the way that they wanted to torture. I think being the mistress of pain, she would have been able to withstand it.
And I think she would have literally shattered, not broken, but shattered. Her psyche would have been completely devastated. Because what Cad Swain does later breaks her. And I don't think that anything else, I don't think that any form of physical torment would have done anything near what the embarrassment kind of emotional torment that Cad Swain puts her through did. Although Rand is being kind of a blockhead about it.
Yeah, completely. They should have turned her over to the Aiel. I saw Aiel taking care of Semaroth, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah.
Even if they didn't
And her way of taking care of her wouldn't have been torturous. It would have been closer to what Cad Swain did.
Yeah, they're great at shaming people. Useless labor. Useless, demeaning labor.
Yep.
Yeah, let her eat that food off the floor like a dog.
Oof. Mm-hmm.
How about I see you bark like a dog, Simarag? I don't know. Yeah. Hey, who wants a treat?
Beg for your supper.
Yeah, that's the only thing that might have even had a chance of working with her. And then she got... Balefired.
She got freed and Balefired. Balefire!
Balefire, I say. She pretty much died in the final death, and I was really, really disappointed because I was really counting heavily on them getting some serious information about healing and stuff from her, and they blew their chance.
Yeah. It would have been interesting if they could have. I kind of hoped.
Well, she
I don't do much self-examination, you can tell, but I kind of hope that they would find some way to bring her back into the light, and she could have been an extreme force for good. But no, they just killed her, and that had done with it, and it worked.
Yep.
And Elza too, Elza Pinfell, who was the only known dark friend among the Aes Sedai that were with Rand.
Yeah, right. And what's with introducing this new Ashaman knife? Knife? N-A-E-F-F?
Knife? Yeah.
Where'd he come from? Never heard of him.
Let's find out, shall we? Knife.
Like we needed new characters. Oh, yeah. How many do we have? 1,800? How many have we killed off? Five?
Yeah. Yeah, looking at his character page on Encyclopedia Watt, every bit of information about him comes from the Gathering Storm. So, yeah, he's not just someone who we haven't heard much from. No, he's a brand new character. No.
Brand new.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting things going on in this chapter. I do like how we kind of get the sense of timing. Because we have how we can kind of connect the happenings and all these and where they are in the grand scheme of the timeline. Because it does mention that Elaine is feeling relieved. And so we can kind of assume that this is sometime closely surrounding when she finally got all the necessary votes in to become the next queen of Andor. That sounds like American Idol. It's Andor Idol, I guess. Caemlyn Idol.
Andor and Idol.
Oh, there's only 12 voters. I'm sorry, love, but I just don't think you've got it. No,
No.
Here's the point, is we're looking for someone who can be a leader, and you can't.
Dear, you just won't do.
I know, I might be doing more Piers Morgan than Simon Cowell.
Yeah, I don't do a good Simon Cowell either. I don't even do a good, what's her name?
Paula?
She wants to be off. Yeah, Paula Abdul. Yeah, I don't even do a good Paula. Okay, well, back to our discussion. Undiverging, as it were. I have to bring up something that has bugged me from the beginning. It must be something that I am totally missing. What is this unusual sword that was recently unearthed that Rand wears that he feels like he recognizes?
Yep, that's a big question. We don't know.
Where did it come from? Who found it?
We don't know. There is a note on Encyclopedia Watt that this is probably Arthur Hawkwing's sword Justice, which we do know that Rand would have personal memories of from the Gathering Storm.
Many lives ago.
But
it never comes out and says that. I mean, there are some allusions to it's the old sword and that someone on Earth did and brought it to him. I want to know who. I want to know who found it and brought it to him. I would love to see a short story about the people who dug that up.
Details.
It would be boring.
I want details.
I'm sure that it would be boring as sin, but I'd still love to see it.
Details. I need details.
Give me
details.
I want to know about this sword. So that we got that going for us.
More importantly, I want to know why this sword is important. Because if it wasn't important, then one, the pattern wouldn't have brought it to Rand.
Right.
And two, it wouldn't be in the books.
Well, or it could just be, you know, one of those famous red herring swords.
Wait, they have red herrings, too? I mean, I knew they had the herons, but now they have red herrings, too?
Yeah, it's a red herring sword.
That's a completely different level.
It's a herring mark. It's a herring mark plate. Oh, God. Yep, it's a herring mark plate. Okay. Thank you, Robert Jordan.
That's so you can tell the people that are so abysmal with the sword that you want to just stand away so that they don't accidentally kill you.
Yeah, you're not a blade master, but we're going to give you a herring mark blade.
What?
It's just a corner
My
diversion.
My blade has a bird on it. That's a pretty bird.
No, that's a little bitty fish, honey. Oh, my goodness.
It fits.
And they said I couldn't do stand-up comedy.
My blade has a bird on it. That's a fish. What?
That was an it I saw. The sign of the red herring, right?
Yep.
Okay, so we have a couple of new things in this chapter. We've got good old Ashima knife, and we've got the mysterious blade.
Yep.
The sword.
We have Rand actually finally yelling at Luce Theron in the presence of other. I mean, we've seen him talk to him, usually mentally. We have seen a little bit out loud. But this is the first time in the presence of others that he's verbally confronted Luce Theron.
And he splits. He runs off. And mentally speaking. So
he's going
why doesn't Luce Theron start gibbering with anger and fear around Semirog like he does around, well, notably Nazrim Taim? I mean, every time he gets in Taim's presence, which is why so many people thought he was Demandred, you know, he's ranting about, I need to kill him. I should have killed him long ago. Why didn't I kill him? Ah. Well, why doesn't he do that about Semirog? She's like badder than Demandred ever thought about being.
That is a good question.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm pondering the implications of that. Because, you're right. He did freak out over Taim, but we haven't seen that over Semirog. That is, And we haven't really seen him react that way to other Forsaken either. The Forsaken that Rand meets up with and is crazy.
Sorry, go ahead.
Mind you, he's... I'm thinking just every Forsaken that Rand's met up with after he went to Looney Town, which I think was probably after Dumani's Wells. Or, probably before that.
Dumani
are completely different thing, yeah. The Dumani's Well, what?
Okay.
Yeah, after Dumani's Wells, but it might have been before that. But no, the Forsaken that he's met up with that. Since then, Luce Theron hasn't had that kind of violent reaction that he did to Taim. However, Rand is usually trying to kill them anyway, so Luce Theron wouldn't have to have the violent reaction. But I don't know why we haven't seen that towards Semirog. That is interesting to contemplate. Any listeners out there who have good theories, email them to us. Comment on this episode. You know, let us know what you think.
It really surprised me because Luce Theron made several comments about Semirog and seemed to be kind of fearful of her. You know, he said things like, she doesn't weep, she gives tears to others, and, so things like that. I mean, he actually seemed frightened of her, but I don't think, has he actually interacted with any of the other Forsaken apart from Lanshear? Did he go crazy in his head when Lanshear was around? I don't recall that he said anything.
Well, I don't think that Rand was all the way to Looney Town until after Lanshear and Moraine went and visited the Finn.
Looney Town. Let me take you to
Looney Town. Why'd you take me to Looney Town?
Looney Town.
Why'd you take me to Looney Town?
Town.
Anyway.
Oh my God. Well, okay, now does he rant about Samael? I don't think he does.
Well,
think he did
at that point
bit.
He is actually attacking Samael, so there's not too much ranting going on. But I'll be perfectly honest, it has been way too long since I've read the middle books because
I have a tendency to start
at the beginning.
I don't know about you,
and then,
but I can rant and attack at the same time. I'm sure Lucerne can.
Oh yeah, probably. Well, Lucerne isn't doing much attacking, so he could probably rant away. I don't know.
Yeah.
But like I say, I need to go back and reread the middle books because I haven't in so long. I have a tendency to stop right before I start Lord of Chaos because I really don't like all the events leading up to Dumai's Wells. They bug the heck out of me. I'm not a happy person to be around after I've read that.
Oh, difficult chapters to read, I must admit.
Yeah.
So, what else can we glean from this chapter?
There was the interesting moment of the banner that is flying against the wind. That was in the beginning of this chapter.
Yeah, he points it out to Min.
And then everyone else looks and sees it, and they're like, oh, that's creepy.
Yeah. And then there's one reference to the events that are delineated in The Strike at Sheol Gul, which is a short story that Robert Jordan wrote, which you can also actually find the entire text of on encyclopedia.watt.org, and I believe on Dragonnet as well.
Yeah, they have the links to where the entire text is. I don't think they actually have the text on their servers, but they have the links to where you can find it, yes.
Yeah.
And you can read it all online. It's really nice.
It's very short, too. It's actually really a short story. But Lucerne is grumbling about the women Aes Sedai not helping them, and then he moans about Elyena. And that, I believe, is a reference to Lara... Oh, I can't remember. Lara Potrei, I can never say her name properly, who is the leader of the women Aes Sedai who are against the idea of sealing the boar, and she basically convinced all of the women Aes Sedai not to support Lucerne in trying to seal the door. So he had to do it only with Sidene instead of combining Sidar and Sidar. I mean, he had to do it only with Sidar instead of combining Sidene and Sidar.
Yeah.
So, I got that backwards again. Wait a minute. Men channel Sidene.
So
he had to do the whole sealing the door with Sidene, which is why the back blast tainted Sidene and not Sidar. Because none of the women would help. And then, like, they had a boycott, which I thought was completely foolish in the extreme.
Crazy. Stupid people.
And Lester Posey was in favor of using the Chodun Kall.
Yeah.
Hold on, sorry.
Well, and they probably would have used the Chodun Kall, except that Samael happened to overrun the place where the control Terangril, the access keys, were being made, and scattered them hither and yon, and
right, they
and
did them they hit them here and there.
And then Demondred and Bilal took over the regions where the actual Songreal, where the actual Chodun Kall statues were. So
not a really great move on her part.
No.
So
unfortunately, the La Terra Posse Decumeni, Latra. I don't know how you pronounce her name, but apparently there's no justice in the world because even after she screwed everybody because of political rivalries, she still rose to a, quoting from Encyclopedia Watt, rose to a prominence rivaling that of Lucerne. Before her death, during the breaking, she still gained a lot of power and
authority. Stupid.
Yeah, I believe she was also known as Shadar Nor or something like that. Shadow Cutter or something like that?
Yes. Cutter of the Shadow or Slicer of the Shadow.
Yeah. So she was pretty pretty famous in her own right. Which I thought was kind of interesting because that sort of always reminds me of what the wolves call Rand, Shadow Killer.
Yeah.
I always thought maybe Cadswain was the reincarnation of La Turquoise, but could be wrong. He certainly pushed
it. Yeah, that would be interesting.
Everybody comes back. It's never over, Luz Theron. just keep coming back, and so do the Forsaken.
Stop!
We're back,
you cannot escape so easily.
Yeah. Cannot escape the trains of the wheel.
Nope.
So, I think we should probably... Go ahead, I'm sorry. Please continue.
Yeah. And I meant to correct myself early, because when I actually read it, because honestly, it's not the turnings of the wheel, because turnings implies that there's a beginning and an end. And there are no beginnings nor endings to the turning of the wheel of time. That's why I should have corrected myself, but I just kept going.
Well, that's fine. I mean, you know, can't get everything right all the time.
I can try, though. I just don't do it well.
Well, there you go. So, I think we should probably move on to chapter 2.
Yes. Yes, we should.
So moving on to chapter 2, which is entitled The Nature of Pain, we now have a chapter that is from Egwene's point of view. Egwene, of course, is ensconced in the White Tower, under guard, basically a prisoner. And Egwene, in the beginning, we see her getting another spanking from Sylviana, the Mistress of Novices. Egwene is getting better at embracing pain, as the Aiel do, but it's still not easy for her. So then after her most recent beating, I refuse to call them spankings, they're beatings, the two Red Aes Sedai, Catarine and Barrasine, meet her to escort her to attend Elida. Egwene goads them on what Elida has done to the tower. Alviarin arrives for her punishment, but she is late. Uh-oh, that'll mean extra stripes for her. On their way to Elida's study, Egwene thinks on the failures she's been promoting, kidnapping Rand, the Black Tower mission, the demotion of Shemarin, the Yellow, who was demoted to accepted. As they pass through the halls, the corridor suddenly dead-ends at a mural of Carrigan Mackinar, ending the rebellion in Mossadoran, another change in the pattern. And now the corridors are actually changing. Egwene decides her best option to deal with Elida is silence. This is her first look at Elida since she, Elaine, and Nynaeve left the tower to hunt the Black Aja. The Aes Sedai Medani is there. Medani, as you may remember, was one of the ferrets sent by the Saladar Aes Sedai to infiltrate the White Tower with news of Loghain being seduced by the Reds. Elida has her researching punishments for traitors. Well, that sounds like fun. She jokes about demoting Shemarin. She does not believe that the Shanchen are a threat, and she talks of a fourth oath of obedience being instituted. Infuriated by this talk, Egwene dumps the soup bowl on the ground to keep from reacting to Elida's ridiculous words. Medani then helps Egwene to clean up, and Egwene, speaking to her undercover, orders Medani to send for her when she is free. Medani agrees after some reluctance. In a rage, Elida sends her out. Egwene goes to the novice dining hall for dinner, where she can hear Varys in the kitchens. She now realizes that Elida will eventually destroy herself with her own arrogance. Egwene's job is to hold the tower together and keep it whole despite the latest depredations. She feels urgency for the White Tower to provide guidance for Rand. And at this point, then, she returns to Sylviana for yet another spanking, intending to visit Lyanna Shireef afterwards. She begins to laugh when she realizes that the pain of spanking is nothing beside the pain of the White Tower crumbling. Embracing pain is not about being hard. It is about understanding its insignificance. She then reminds Sylviana that Elida's misguided orders only carry weight if sisters actually accept them. Now, those are two pretty powerful statements right there. One of them is one that Rand could certainly learn, that embracing pain is not about being hard. The other is that Elida's orders only carry weight if sisters actually accept them. If more sisters would just stand up to her, she wouldn't be able to run the tower down the road to ruin the way she's doing. So I think that's pretty significant. This is really an amazing chapter to me when you think about it. Egwene has her own little epiphany. Elida seems to be getting madder and madder. I mean, just insaner, if that's not even a word. Lyda seems to be getting more insane by the day. You know, she's just completely drunk with her own power, apparently.
Yeah, well, both of them are correct, I think. She's not only getting more insane, but she is getting to be a more angry person.
But you're right. She was pretty angry in the beginning.
Yeah. Well, not, I don't think so. I think she's gotten much worse. I don't know that all of this can be attributed to Alviarin's meddling. I think a lot of it is, like you said, the power is just going to her head and making her complete. Yeah. However, I do have to agree with you. This is an amazingly powerful chapter. In fact, I think all of the Egwene chapters in the book are amazing, amazing, amazing. They are all really good.
And
we get this one. We get several more down the line. Not just the ones where she's blasting Tolrockan out of the air, but all of them that she's in, they're just amazing. I'm trying
to
remember.
I didn't really love this chapter when I first read it, but it really grew on me because I didn't like the fact that, you know, that she had to kowtow to Elida so much, you know.
Yeah. Well.
So there is one note at the end of this chapter summary on encyclopedia-watt.org, and that is, why is Alviarin late to her punishment? Was there another shift of locations in the White Tower, or did something else delay her? Because as we know, she be black. I mean, let's face it, that's what the Black Sisters do. That's what the Dark Friends are all about.
Yeah, that is interesting, because she's a creepy, crazy one, Alviarin is. I mean, I don't understand all of it. I don't even know what happened to her after the whole run-in with Mesaana and Shadar Haran.
Well, she's marked by the Dark One now.
Yeah, it's like I say, she's creepy.
She's a creepy one. I wonder if she was around Pat and Fane long enough to pick up any of this taint. You know, that's something that we kind of forget about, that Pat and Fane actually spent time with Elida and kind of gleefully boasted to himself in his mind that he had brushed her with enough of his taint that she wouldn't trust her own mother anymore.
Yeah, but I have to wonder how much of Elida's crazy is from Pot and Fane, how much is from Alviarin, and how much is just her own power-hungry demeanor. Because all of those factors are at work, and I'm not sure which one's most prevalent.
Yeah, but I mean, if Pot and Fane said he brushed her with his paint, enough of it to make a difference, then that's going to be coming
creepy
into play
then,
somewhere.
Then bad things is happening.
Okay, well, I'm so glad in The Gathering Storm that Rand had his little epiphany and is perhaps now permanently back on course to being a normal, relatively nice human being again, because, oh my goodness, was I getting tired of that hard as steel. You know, first he was stone, and then he was going to be iron, and then he was steel, and what next, Quendiar? I mean, you know, come on, Rand, just...
Actually, I think he did go Quendiar at one point in time,
probably
didn't he?
Probably did, yeah, he probably did. And the next thing you know, it's like, you know, just let go of some of this rage, dude. Let it out. Get over it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Maybe you shouldn't be telling the Dragon Reborn who's actually mad to be letting this rage out. Maybe not a good idea, Virginia, now that I think about it.
Especially not when he has a access key to one of the children call in his hand.
Yeah. Probably not my best idea. Okay, forget I said that.
Well, he tried to. He was going to at the top of Dragon Mountain until he decided to just crush the statue and say, anyway, getting back into the Egwene chapter, the Nature of Pain here, the way that Elida has chosen to punish Mediani, because it's not actual punishment, it's just, oh, hey, why don't you do a deal for me? Why don't you go and research the punishments that the tower has for traitors and then dream about them all? Because you know that's the unsaid undertone.
That really is.
Dream about it. Think about it happening to you, because it will.
Yeah, a little psychological torture going on there.
And as punishments go, that's a pretty darn good, as like you say, psychological torture goes, that's pretty darn good. I have to give her evil points for that.
evil points. More points into her evil column. The cool evil, not the, oh my gosh, that person's evil. No, the, ooh, that person's evil. She doesn't have enough there to make her cool yet, though. Or to make sad that
Elida
she got hauled off as a Damani.
Yeah, Elida is not, definitely not evil cool. She's definitely just evil boring, really.
Yep.
She's evil. Boy, you're glad to see her get carried away by a rockin.
Yeah,
you know?
Especially when she's joking about the fact that a sister was demoted to novice.
Yeah, which isn't even legal. She made that law up herself.
Yes.
She didn't demote her to novice. She demoted her to accepted.
Yeah, it's like Elida accepted. She took it to accepted. I thought she took her all the way down.
No,
well,
she didn't bust her all the way down.
And it's exactly what Egwene has been saying pretty much the whole time, and she just reiterates it here. She can only do this because everyone is letting her.
Yeah.
If Sherriman had said, oh, heck, no, you don't, she wouldn't have been demoted.
Yeah.
If she had continued to act and behave like an Aes Sedai, everyone would have continued to treat her like an Aes Sedai, and Elida would have just been annoyed.
Yeah.
More so.
And if the Hall had stood up to her, she would have had no chance whatsoever of demoting anybody.
If the Hall had stood up to her, she wouldn't be Omerlin.
Well, this is true. But you would think after all this, you know, ridiculous stuff about, you know, every time she's, you know, every time we see her dealing with the sitters, there are fewer chairs and she's dismissing some of them and she's giving them penances. You know, you would think at some point in time they would just group together, sort of just group together, and say, enough is enough, you're a maniac, we're so sorry.
You know what I would have loved to see? You know what I would have loved to see? And then it can't happen. I would have loved to see Cad Swain versus Elida.
Oh, yeah.
Omerlin with Elida. I can just see old gray hair with her things, Cad Swain just smacking Elida across the face and saying, you're being an idiot, get out.
Oh, no. She would have turned her over her knee and gave her a paddling. Such a spanking as you have never seen. And then she would have said, get out of here! You're a nutcase, woman!
She would have
to the Aes Sedai.
She probably would have shielded her for the rest of her life and sent her off to penance at some farm.
Yeah, yeah.
We
don't know. Does Gatsway know that trick of tying off a shield for life like that, the way Mogedion did with good old Leandrin?
Oh, probably not. But she probably not. But you know,
I'd have to.
She would have nodded it anyway.
I'd have to invent.
She would have nodded it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. We have to invent that shield just for her.
This is for you. I don't like you, Joy. As it is, I don't like the ending she got in this book, because now I have to feel sorry for her because she's a Damani. And
I have
to feel sorry for Damani. It's imperative in my nature that I feel sorry for Damani. It's just something about the fact that they are forced into servitude that just makes me feel for them.
Not
which is unfortunate when I hate them, when I hate the person who has become a Damani, but I have to feel sorry for them because they're Damani.
I have sympathy for Damani, but not that Damani. That Damani, I will take that leash, and she will have nettles across her backside every day until she cannot see straight. I would make her feel boiling water until next Tuesday. I would do everything I could think of to her. She was evil. She is evil, and she's horrible, and she's arrogant, and I am so glad she's gone. I hope they put her to work in the deepest, darkest mine, you know, digging ores out of the earth and never let her see the light of day again.
I am afraid that we will see her again, though. That we'll see. Here.
Balefire is too.
I'm afraid that we will see Sufa popping up again as a highly respected Damani.
Balefire is too good for her. You know what they say in Texas? There's two excuses for murder that'll get you off every time. First one is, she needed killing. The second one is, my family's involved. Okay?
Ooh.
Well, yeah. Egwene's got both of those going for her. So she got that going for her. So she can definitely kill Elida. It's cool. I'm on board with that. Elida needs to go. Balefire's too quick, though. She needs to be absolutely demoni for the next 800 years.
Unfortunately, she won't live that long because she's still got the three O's. So.
All right, 400.
So I'm guessing that Sufa actually won't be that important to demoni because she can't do anything except pretty lights in the sky and healings.
Yeah, exactly. And be obnoxious. Well, no, she could do the foretelling, but I guess all the demoni and Shanzen could do the foretelling pretty much.
Well, not all of them, but some of them do have the foretelling, yeah.
Yeah, more of them than over here, apparently. That
yeah, it seems like they're much more talented in Shanzen than they are in Ranland.
I don't think that they're more talented in most ways. I think that more of them have the foretelling, but that just may be because that was
also more of them had the searching for ores that Egwene has. No one even thought that Egwene might have extra power in Earth or whatever until she was collared as a Demone and they tested her for it.
Don't get me started on all the things that the Aes Sedai and Ranland have conveniently forgotten.
Or ignored.
It's another one of those things that they
yeah.
certainly know about the ability to work with ores and metals, but nobody has strength in it anymore. And it's like, well, I just woke up one morning and I just couldn't do it anymore. I don't know what happened.
Yep.
I forgot.
Yep.
Survey says, not very likely. What are you drinking? You forgot how to travel? What?
Yeah. Well,
you forgot how to mine ores, huh?
Yep.
And what about the smoking tears? You forgot that too? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a massive attack of ADD, I guess.
Wait. You remembered how to link? That's amazing.
Yeah, wow. Oh, I remembered how to link. They just apparently forgot how to bring men into it.
Well, no, they still could do it.
Yeah.
It's just not something that I'd ever practiced, because guess what? Because in Book 9, Nynaeve instructs Rand on how to do it, and it's the same way as she would instruct she had instructed the other sisters for the Bowl of the Wind. Just
yeah.
open yourself up and let me grab it, pretty much.
Okay, now here, I'm going off on another tangent again. What about that Bowl of the Winds? Remember, there was a... it was the seal on both of the Seafolk women's letters to Rand, and it showed two concave-shaped objects, like the bowl, facing each other, with wavy lines going between them, which I think indicates the One Power. Does that mean that there is yet another Bowl of the Winds that's supposed to be used in concert with the first one to make the weather really right instead of all wacko-wacko?
The fact that you remembered that seal exists astounds me, because I don't even remember letters being sent to Rand, let alone the seals on them.
Well,
however, from your description...
He got a letter from Harine in... Where was she, in Camelon or Carrion? I can't remember. And then he got a letter from, I've forgotten her name, in Carrion, and he didn't read either one of them, and he was told to do it. And then finally he did go out to see, I think it was Harine, and he took men with him, remember, and they went in all this, you know, state and panoply and everything like that. But he got those two letters, and he basically ignored them. But they both have the same seals on them. And I just thought that was really interesting. It's kind of kicked around in the back of my mind until suddenly it surfaced.
Yeah,
in a complete tangent.
Yeah, that is interesting, because the like I say, I don't remember it, the seal itself. However, if it was described like that by Robert Jordan, then probably there is another Bowl of the Winds. Whether or not it will ever be used, I'm not sure if they have to be used in tandem, but whether or not it ever will be, I don't know.
Yeah, but what an odd thing to put on the seal. If there weren't two of them needed, why would they even do that? You know, why wouldn't they just show one of them, you know, like with wavy lines going up to clouds or something like that? And, you know, remember after they used the Bowl of the Winds, the men all said that Sidene felt funny there. You know, it wanted to do what it wanted to do, and it was kind of going crazy. And then the Demani also got sick because they couldn't control Sidar. Maybe because the bowl was used in a manner in which it was not meant to be used, only half of it. It worked, but only halfway. And it still left those residues of Sidar and Sidene weirdness floating around.
In that case, do you think that the other half of the bowl is in the tower, and that's what the girls found first?
Ooh, I like that. I've always wondered what that hidden terangrial was there that they found first with Need. Yeah, very possible. God knows the Aes Sedai never figure out what it was, would they?
Yeah.
They're as bad as the tyrants.
Throw it in the room. We don't want it.
Yeah. They're as bad as the tyrants for just stuffing all the Tarangla they don't know anything about into a room and leaving it there to rot, you know?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, I like that idea. Good catch there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, good catch to you because it was your idea.
The other thing that I thought might be the hidden thing in the tower that they needed to get, which I've mentioned it before, might be the other Sa'angreal made for men that Lanfear knew about that was more powerful than Kalendor. One she knew still existed, which we assume must be the Choden Kaal, but there's yet another that a man can use that's stronger than Kalendor. And I've always kind of thought that might be, and I've also kind of wondered since then that it might not be the small detail that was mentioned in books 4 through 6 that will turn out to be significant.
Well, except that he had said that small detail was brought up in multiple books. And if I'm remembering that it was only mentioned the once.
Yeah, it was only mentioned the once. Lanfear mentioned it and then probably stopped talking about it. Well, then what's the small detail? I'm really tangent us now. What's the small detail then that comes up?
I don't know. We haven't figured it out
either.
Yet.
Brandon, we're not as smart as you. Help us out.
He did say that it would come to fruition in the Towers of Midnight, and so we don't have very long to wait to find out. Only until November 2nd. Woohoo!
You will see it come to its fruition.
Oh, okay.
I'll be wrapped around your finger. Never mind. Right.
Well, getting back to the Nature of Pain and Egwene, I really like how in this chapter, because I had been kind of annoyed at Egwene before this, because rather than attempting to, her attempt was to further divide the tower against itself so that she could easily come in and take over. And I really, really, really liked how in this chapter, finally she gets it. And rather than trying to fracture the tower into more pieces that were easy to pick up and put back together, she's trying to keep the tower in one piece while Elida's sitting there with her chisel trying to crack it in half.
Yeah, a chisel and a really big hammer.
Yeah.
Elida did a really, really good job on the tower, let me tell you. It'll take decades before all those wounds are healed, no matter how good an Ammerlin Egwene is. And she will be a good one, I'm convinced.
She's already a fantastic Ammerlin.
Yeah. I love what Suan said. You know, when she was stilled and she was looking kind of forward to teaching Egwene about how to be an Ammerlin, she said to herself that this could, you know, this didn't make up for losing Sidar, but Egwene, teaching an Ammerlin to be an Ammerlin, Egwene would be an Ammerlin to make thrones tremble. And I thought, boy, she sure fulfilled that little prophecy.
Oh, yeah.
She was. She was.
I mean, not only her political prowess, which is amazing for someone who grew up in the freaking Two Rivers.
And a farm,
And all of this maturing that she's done in the last 2 years, but also... And it's not just the political prowess, which is what we've seen the Ammerlins be, is just these great, powerful political leaders. But then we also have Egwene in the busted side of the tower blowing Tol Rock and out of the air.
Yeah.
So Egwene is amazing.
Yep. Well, we've established that. Nobody's going to argue with the fact that Egwene is pretty darn amazing. When you're considering that, you know, when she left the Two Rivers with the boys, she was almost an afterthought, you know. She just kind of tagged along because she didn't want to be left behind and so forth and so on. And look
and
at what
Rand didn't want to leave her behind, really.
But it's going to be too dangerous. But you know, look what an integral part of the books she's become, you know. Well, I think she actually probably had more face time in Gathering Storm than Rand did.
I'm not sure than Rand, but then anyone else. She and Rand are the main characters in the Gathering Storm. She got pretty much half the book to herself.
Yeah.
That's how important she has become.
I love it. Little girl from the Two Rivers, innkeeper's daughter, makes good in the big city. Yep.
Oh.
So
amazing.
Anything else on chapter 2?
You know, I think we're good for chapter two.
I like the soup bowl. I don't want to talk about that soup bowl.
Okay, don't react, don't react. Cool. Oh, don't. Okay, drop it. There we go. We're good. We're good. I can dive out of sight and worry about this now and not worry about me throwing it in a light of stupid face.
Oh, wait, I have to drop it. Ah! It reminds me.
It's either this or I kill her. Those are my two choices right now.
Crossover coming. Crossover coming. Dobby must do it, sir.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, there we go. Okay, you want to do chapter three while I try to regain my sanity?
Now, moving on to chapter three, The Ways of Honor. This is from Avienda's point of view, and we start with her Rurark, Hirin, and five other maidens and true bloods are scouting the Dormani refugees. This is the 10th band of refugees in less than a week. Rurark and O'Brain have secured Vander Even, and now the Aiel are scouting between there and the manor where Rand is at. Avienda blames the refugees on city life, but thinks that Elaine does a good job in Camelin, so she's not entirely sure what's wrong. Her duty, though, is to Rand. Hirin thinks the refugees are no threat, but Rurark is cautious. Avienda is confused about her honor. She's no longer a maiden, but she's not yet a wise one. She thought she was doing well in Camelin until she was dragged away. Now the wise ones will not teach her, and they give her punishments. As they progress to the manor where Rand is staying, they meet up with 200 other Aiel. That's a lot of Aiel, including Amis, Bear, Milani, and Nadre. Amis grills Avienda about her opinions on their work and about Rand and Min. As they talk, Amis seems to agree with Avienda's opinions, but then she gives her useless labor suitable for Dysong's severe punishment. And that's the end of the chapter. We do eventually find out what Avienda has done wrong and why she's getting these stupid chores. But it takes a while. Takes her a while. I didn't catch on.
I didn't catch on until finally she
reached her breaking point. And let's not spoil that too much right now.
Well, I always go back to the phrase, the Aiel are great believers in useless labor as a way to build character.
Yes, they are. I love the story kind of behind the Avienda chapters because Brandon talked about them several times over the during the tour, and he always talked about how the first time he tried to ride Avienda, he didn't get it right, and he knew it wasn't right. The second time, he still didn't get it right, and he knew it wasn't right. But he also knew that he didn't know how to get it right, so he sent it to Team Jordan and said, what am I doing wrong? And why he couldn't get it right is because the Aiel way of thinking is so completely foreign to anything that we as Americans think of as can think. It's completely different, and they show that later on when, in fact, they're showing it right now in the way that Avienda is getting these useless labor punishments, and all of it. It's just...
Yeah. I didn't see that coming either when I was reading it, and I confess that I was continually irritated by the whole thing because I just couldn't figure out exactly what the problem was, you know?
Yeah, it's like, well, they can't be mad at her for being in love with Rand. I mean, they have plural marriages. Why would they be mad at her? So what is it? I mean... What has Avienda done? Are they mad about the dresses? No, they wouldn't be mad about the dresses, would they? Yeah, so...
What is the deal?
Mind you, I wasn't curious for very long because I tore through the book, but that's beside the point.
Yeah. So, I'm not really sure how much else is in this chapter of real significance other than Avienda's dilemma. Let me cruise through it again real quickly.
I,
I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that, and help me remember, Virginia, and listeners, correct me if I'm wrong, please, but is this the first time that we've gotten an actual point of view from an IEL and been privy to their entire thought processes?
No, we've had Avienda's point of view before, for sure. There was that one where she's reflecting on her toe to Rand.
Oh, that's right.
How she's going to need it. You know, one way would, you know, result in this. The other way would result in her killing herself. And one canceled out the other, so neither one is going to work for her. I know we've had at least one point of view from Avienda. And I actually don't know if we've had point of views from any other points of view from any other IEO.
Yeah, listeners, let us know if we have, because I'd like to go back and reread them. But it is interesting to kind of get into the thought processes of the IEL and to just see, it's like, how do you make those intuitive leaps? That's, what? Okay. That's interesting.
And isn't it also interesting that somebody of the IEL, like Ruark, along with Tarian and like Dobrain and others, you know, they seem to have accepted a lot of things that we never thought they might be able to.
It's kind of like the wise ones say, you know, Rand is not treating or is not acting like an IEL leader. He is acting like a king over the IEL, and it's not going to work for very much longer.
Hmm.
Or was that in a completely different book? I think that might have been several books previous, and you might have gotten over it by now. I don't know. I doubt it, because Rand's being kind of a bit of a blockhead for several books.
I believe
that quote was from in fact, I know that quote was from previous books ago. Because I think it was to... I'm pretty sure that it was to Elaine before the Aiel all got up and got out of Camelin, because they were called to Ered Domon.
Yeah, you're probably right. I'm actually surprised that Aiel have stayed with him this long, through thick and thin, even through his, you know, madness and various other weird abuses. They're still pretty dedicated, you know, the one true dedicated kind of. Shall we try to go on to chapter 4, or?
If you want. It's your turn,
okay.
Though.
All right, well, we'll move on now to chapter 4, which is entitled Nightfall and is primarily from Gawain's point of view. We haven't seen one from him in a little while. And as we open, Gawain is on his horse challenge with Jasal, Rajar, and 50 other younglings. He's really gathered a lot of younglings. 50. Wow. He's watching the sunset through the unnatural clouds. The clouds are higher than Dragonmount. They are scouting Gareth Bryn's soldiers in a small village. The soldiers are searching villages, looking for the younglings who have been harassing them per Elia's orders. Jasal wants to send in Roderick's squad to take out the soldiers, but Gawain is cautious because they are too close to their base in Dorlan. Thinking of facing Bryn, his mentor, brings up the memory of killing Hamar and Cúin, the trainers of warders at the White Tower, and the nightmare of Dumai's Wells. He does not understand why Gareth Bryn is here instead of in Camelin protecting Elaine as he ought to be. Gawain struggles with his loyalties to Elaine, the Gawain, and the White Tower. There are only 300 younglings. They still survive against 50,000 troops only because Gawain is so familiar with Gareth Bryn's tactics. Gawain wishes he could see the sun again. So,
yeah.
There
isn't much in this. I mean, there is the... We obviously can understand why Brian isn't in Camelin. There's two reasons. One, because Morgaith kicked him out. And two,
yeah,
because after that, he went chasing after Suwon.
Right. And then he got caught up with the Saladar Aes Sedai leading and building their army, which is now up to 50,000 men. That's been mentioned twice now, once in chapter 1 and once now. 50,000 men is a decent-sized army for those days. Really,
have the 300 younglings. That's what, one banner, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
But,
Oh, yeah, you don't really have numbers greater than that to throw around.
Oh, yeah. Matt has numbers greater than that. I think the Band of the Red Hand. I think the Band of the Red Hand could wipe out the entirety of Brian's army in sheer numbers. I mean, I don't think that tactically it would happen.
In Lord of Chaos, when Rand sends Mount to Saladar, Rand's approaching Saladar, and oh, who's the scout, the heavy scout that can ride anything? I can't remember his name.
Well,
anyway, Bannon. Yeah, so Bannon, you know, rides up and he scouts the place out and he comes back minus a few of his men that the warders take up. And he said, no, they have a lot of army. And I said, they're not army too, bigger than yours.
Well, but since then, you know, the entire time that Nat was in Ibu Dar and on his way out of Altera, Talmanes has been growing it. I mean, when Talmanes found Matt in Knife of Dreams, Matt was surprised at how big the Band of the Red Hand had gotten. Because just a small portion of the band that Talmanes brought with him was bigger than what Matt had left behind.
That's true, but the British been constantly recruiting soldiers, too.
Well, that doesn't matter because the band's with. I think the band is part of the 5,000 troops.
Mm-hmm.
At least part of the 5,000 troops. Didn't Talmanes say that he had left part of the band with traveling with the Aes Sedai?
Mm-mm.
I thought he had.
Never joined the Panthers army.
You're cutting out now. I can't.
Shadowing
what?
So basically, this chapter is just setting up the things that are going to come in the future. I think the only really, maybe significant, interesting part is these unnatural clouds we're seeing pop up again that we saw in the prologue.
Yeah, they're floating above the peak of Dragonmount. I mean, you think about it, Dragonmount is a couple miles high. It's huge, massive, and the clouds are above the peak.
Mm-hmm.
Usually you can't. You shouldn't be able to see the peak of Dragon Mount through the clouds, but no. But yeah, you're right. This is just a lot of Gawain angst.
I actually think Gawain angst is almost becoming as annoying as Perrin angst was.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I think that's going to wrap us up for tonight. As always, if you want to leave us feedback, you can always call our voicemail, which is 888-333-7690.
You can also email us at podcast@dragonmount.com.
And as always, you can find us at our homepage, which is dragonmount.com/podcast. And there you can find our archive of all our old episodes, along with a comment section after each, which comments we go through. And if you leave us a comment, we will read it, and sometimes we'll even respond. And there have been some really interesting conversations started up on the comments after the episodes, so feel free to use those.
Yeah, we love it. Sometimes we have more time to spend on the podcast pages than others, but generally one or more of us will, you know, respond to something or another. We do read it all eventually. Sometimes I'm really quick getting back to people. Other times it takes me a while, but it's the same with emails. If you email us or leave us a voicemail, somebody will get back to you. Well, not necessarily with the voicemail, but if you email us, somebody will usually get back to you within the day, maybe even less.
Yep. And if you leave us a voicemail, generally they end up in the podcast unless there's something that for some reason or another should not be actually part of the broadcast. Generally, they'll end up in the podcast when we do our voicemail episodes.
The only exceptions to that have been a couple of voicemail podcasts that we had recorded that somehow got lost during computer crash. So if you did leave a voicemail and you've never heard your voicemail on there, just call back and do it again because we'll eventually get to it. Nothing but a party. At least Rand never had to worry about computer crashes.
No, just mental breakdowns. All right, as we wrap up, we just want to thank some people. First off, Encyclopedia Watt for their summaries, for all the information that they have, just being an excellent, excellent resource. And also dragonmount.com for basically hosting us. It's their server space that we use to host our podcast, and we want to thank them from the depths of our hearts for that. Josh Needleman for the music that we use. It's wonderful, great stuff, and we thank him for giving that to us. And as always, all of you who are listening to us, who allow us to keep going, who keep downloading our drivel, because apparently you find it worth listening to, you strange, strange people.
And I'd like to thank the Academy and my producer and all of my writers and, no, wait a minute, long speech, sorry.
And I do need to thank my hair and makeup people, because without them, you wouldn't be able to see me. Wait.
You'd be invisible. No. No, seriously, we thank everybody who's listening. Also, I think we should also thank Brandon Sanderson, who is doing a fabulous job taking over this series after Mr. Jordan's untimely demise. He's done a great job with The Gathering Storm. I have absolutely no doubt that he's going to do an even better job with Towers of Midnight and The Memory of Light. Can't wait. Absolutely can't wait. And we want to also thank the other members of Team Jordan, Harriet, and Alan and Maria, and everybody who has anything to do, tour books, anything to do with this fabulous series that means so much to most of us, all of us, really. If you're listening to this, by this time in the podcast, it means something to you. Trust me, or you wouldn't still be here. But thank you, everybody. Thanks for listening. And thank you, Spencer, for coming on. And next time, hopefully, Andrew will be able to make it back. He was unavoidably detained. And he will be back next episode. Or
yep.
He will be bail fired, one of the two.
Yep, yep. And thank you, Virginia, for inviting me into this madness. And also thank you to Jason with a Y and Carrie, the original two, who started all of this.
And Ben.
And amazing
and
people.
Yeah.
And all
and
the
Ben,
podcasters
Ben's
that have been. Ben and Ben and the other Andrew and Jesse and Mark and Amir.
Amir.
Yep.
Yeah, and we hope to get Jesse back again. She keeps promising that she'll join us again. Mark also can step in from time to time. And, yeah. So that's our big, long roster of thank yous. We may be joking about it, but
it's a big, long list.
Yeah.
We may treat it lightly, but it's not really.
Yeah.
No, we only present it lightly. We don't treat it lightly.
Yeah. We need you each and every one.
Yep.
Also, we'd be very remiss if we didn't actually mention the host and founder of DragonMount.com, Jason Denzel.
Woo, Jason.
Hey, Jason and Jennifer Liang, who is instrumental in helping him administrate the site.
Go, Jennifer.
Also, go, Jennifer. And she's also instrumental in putting on JordanCon every year.
And she's in charge of the Watt track at DragonCon every year. She keeps
mm-hmm.
herself busy.
She's a very
and she
busy
does
lady.
An amazing job of all of it.
Yep. So we thank her. We hope to have her back on again, too. She and Jason both. So, in the meantime, this is Virginia thanking you all once again for being with us for yet another round of this Watt Insanity. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. We had a blast. I hope you do too. And thank you, Spencer. And until we meet again, may the light illumine you.
And until next week, may you find water and shade.
The Fourth Age Podcast is brought to you by DragonMount.com. To contact us, visit our website, bit.ly/fourthage.
Just if two people bail fire each other at the same time. If two people
the pattern
bail
unravel.
Fire each other, oh my god. At the exact
it,
same
it destroys
instance,
the universe.
Each one undoes what the other one just did. Oh
it
my
destroys
god.
The universe and the pattern unravels.
Paradox.
I have a feeling that they would both just be burned back and that they would just both have been bail fired.
Okay, well, any philosophers in the audience who know what would happen if two people bail-filed each other at the exact same instance, please let us know.
Please do not put this in the comment section. If you're going to start a metaphysical discussion on this, use the Fourth Age Forum, because we want our comment section to be open for other discussions. And our metaphysical, which can go on for huge ever, just forum, because that's the forum for the forum.
I don't care if you post it on the podcast page. Spencer can bail fire you if he wants. So.
Anyway.
Details. I need details.
Give me
I just,
details.